We are continuing, after a short pause, our series through the book of Genesis. We've got to chapter 11. It's been a slow walk, but we're getting there. And after this, we'll have a break for Advent and Christmas. But I'm reading from Genesis 11, verses 1 to 9 this morning. You may remember that Noah has landed back on the earth after the flood and started again. And the people have increased in number. And then we get to this section. Now, the whole world had one language and a common speech. As people moved eastwards, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. They said to each other, "Come, let's make brick and bake them thoroughly." They used brick instead of stone and bitumen for mortar. Then they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves and not be scattered over the face of the whole earth." But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower that they were building. The Lord said, "If as one people speak in the same language they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language so they will not understand each other." So the Lord scattered them from there over all the earth, and they stopped building the city. This is why it was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole world. From there the Lord scattered them over the face of the whole earth. So as we come to the end of our recent series on Genesis, as I say, before we enter Advent and the weeks leading up to Christmas, we reach another interesting story. So far in our journey through this first book of the Bible, you could say it's been a little bit non-stop for the people in the passengers. Firstly, we looked at the creation of the world, the creation of human beings, and the commissioning of human beings by God, which was a relatively positive start to the first book of the Bible. However, as we progressed through the book of Genesis, we entered a whole phase of problems and disasters, beginning, of course, with the fall of creation. Adam and Eve and the serpent and the banishment from the Garden of Eden, which was followed by the murder of Abel, by the terror of Cain as he was sent to wander the earth, and by the establishment of evil, which of course resulted in the total wickedness of the entire world and the subsequent destruction of the earth by the flood. You could say it's been a whole catalogue of sin and consequences, and what could only be described really as a roller coaster ride for human beings. It reminded me of a story that I read once by a writer, a Christian writer called Max Lucado, who has written many books. Some of you might have read some of them. And he tells this story of a lady who owned a parakeet called Chippy. And she loved Chippy because Chippy would chatter and sing and just brighten up her whole day. And she looked after him very well, and she used to clean him out regularly. So one day, she was cleaning the bottom of Chippy's cage with the vacuum cleaner, hoovering up all the bits, when the telephone rang. So she went to answer the telephone and continued to hoover, leaning over, reach for the phone. And as she was on the phone, the nozzle turned upwards, and poor old Chippy got sucked into the vacuum cleaner. The woman, realising in horror what she had done, dropped the phone and ripped over open the bag. And there was Chippy, still alive, but covered in dirt. So she grabbed him, ran to the bathroom, turned on the tap, full blast, and put Chippy under there to get everything off. He looked a little bit horrified, but he was clean, very wet. So then she got the hairdryer, and she blew dry him so that he was clean and dry, put him back in his cage. A few days later, her friend who had been on the phone rang and said, "Well, are you all right? How's Chippy?" She said, "Well, he sits in his cage and he just stares ahead and he's not said a word since the incident." It's been an ordeal for Chippy,
And it was also an ordeal for the people of the earth through the start of the book of Genesis. One thing after another after another. Of course, there have been a few highlights, let's not forget. We did stop on the seventh day for a bit of a rest. That wasn't too arduous. And we have encountered one righteous man in the entire human race. That was Noah, of course, which resulted in God creating his first covenant with the world following the flood. But overall, it's fair to say that the start 10 chapters of the first book of the Bible have been a little bit difficult. Human beings have gone through the mill, so to speak. Life has been tough. And so it's really no surprise, I guess, that when we get to chapter 11 and we encounter those who are now left in the world, we find that they've decided to settle down. After a history of horror and trauma and insecurity, we find that they now seek a spot on the earth that looks good, a place that is secure, where the inhabitants of the earth can find food and water and shelter. And they find it on a plain in Shinar, we're told, which interestingly is also known later as Babylon, the place where the enemies of Israel will reside in the future, and the place where the people of God will later be taken into exile when Jerusalem is destroyed. But for now, it's the place where they choose to settle down. So they start to lay their roots, firstly, by beginning to build a city, and secondly, by looking to establish an extremely tall tower, whose dimensions are intended to reach the heavens. So not only will these people have a place to call their own, but they will also be able to make a name for themselves and not be scattered once more over the whole earth. Or if you like, they set about building this city and tower in a valley near the east of the world so that they can finally find security, safety, and a settlement. And so that they can also have ready access to God through the tower as they carry out their everyday lives. So that after a history of destruction and near annihilation, after a history where they've had little or no control over what has become of their lives, these people can finally live in a place where they call the shots and they can seek to defend the lives they want to live. And you know, in a sense, this is totally understandable. I mean, after a period of uncertainty in their life, let alone near destruction and annihilation, who doesn't want to feel safe? Who doesn't want to protect themselves? Who doesn't want to do everything they can to make sure that life runs smoothly? On the one hand, you could say this is a perfectly natural desire that these people have, one that we all have when we've been through a time of trauma. And as we look at the story, we can understand where this desire has come from. It's the natural desire of human beings to try and make life okay. And yet, on the other hand, there is also a sense, as we read this passage, that although this might seem the most natural thing to do, to settle down and to build security, given their history, and although, in a sense, it's admirable that all the people of the world want to join together to make life secure for each other, looking at this story, there is also a sense that it's a very unnatural thing to do as well. I mean, for a start, we're told that as they embark on this building project, that they don't even have the right materials to accomplish what they want to do. For instance, they've no stone to build the foundations. They've no stone to build the walls. They've no cement to secure anything together. They've no proper raw materials of the time to contemplate building, let alone a whole city and an impressive tower. And yet, despite this, they go ahead anyway, using mud, brick and tar to create not one house, which that might do, but a whole city, and using the same mud, brick and the same tar to create an impressive tower reaching up to heaven. They improvise. if you like, using substandard materials, I think we might say today, to build what they think will be impressive. It reminds me a little bit, I don't know, it's a little bit embarrassing. I don't watch Big Brother now, but I used to watch Big Brother in the first few series. I don't know whether anyone else here... Good, a few people are nodding. Don't feel quite so embarrassed. But the second series, they had a competition to set world records. Don't know whether anyone remembers this. And one housemate, Darren... No, Dean. Forgive, Dean. He had to build a tower out of sugar cubes. Anyone remember that? No. Excellent. Anyway, it's quite simple. He had to build the tallest tower out of little sugar cubes. And basically, one of the whole episodes was taken up with this. That's how exciting Big Brother has always been, isn't it? He had to break the world record, which was 18 centimetres high. Do you think he did it? If you say yes, most say no. He did do it. He built a tower out of sugar cubes, which was 1.2 metres high. That's quite impressive, don't you think? And actually, it was quite impressive. I remember he had, you know, two sticking out and two... Anyway, it was a very good tower, and he broke the world record. And they even had an official Guinness Book of Records person who was allowed into the house to check the tower. I believe the record still stands. So if you want to try and beat it, maybe we could do that. 1 week. Anyway, it was a very impressive achievement. But the thing is, it was never really going to last. In fact, I think it lasted, you know, a couple of minutes, and then it was down. Someone knocked it down. And here, on the plain of Shinar, where the inhabitants of the earth had chosen to settle, we find them creating something that, however impressive, given the materials they had, was never really going to last. Because at the end of the day, what they were really seeking to do was not just build a city and build a tower, but they were seeking to control the environment that they were in. Even though they didn't have the means or the materials to do that, what they were seeking in their own way was to desperately control a life that they really had no control over at all. And you know, the only other time that we've actually seen this in the Bible up to this point is when Cain, having killed his brother Abel and been banished by God to wander the face of the earth, decides to build himself a city, naming it after his son Enoch, a place where he too can seek to control a life that has become even more uncontrollable than it was before. And as we see that mirrored here in Genesis chapter 11, we also see the people have progressed, because not only are they seeking to control life, to make everything secure and safe, but in building the impressive tower, the inhabitants of Earth are also seeking to control God as well. Because as they build a tower which reaches to the heavens, they're creating, if you like, a space where God can come down to them. In the way that they choose, in the place that they decide, under the conditions that they've set for him. You see, as we look at this passage, in a way, we're looking at a desperate people who are trying to stamp their authority on the world. Of course, God being God, knowing all and being everywhere, he immediately senses the danger that these plans might ultimately bring. And having covenanted with the world just a few chapters before, promising never to wipe out the inhabitants of the earth again, he seeks to alter the situation. He seeks to change the road which this building plan is going down. And before the tower is even completed, or if you like, before God's route to earth is even established by the people, in his way of choosing, and at the pace that he decides and under the conditions he sets, God comes down to visit the people, to assess the situation, and ultimately to carry out his judgment, which scatters them all over the earth. confusing their language, uprooting their settlement, and making them totally vulnerable, as they were before they began to build. Now, many people have read this passage and depicted it as a picture of divine punishment. You know, the hand of God brought upon the people of the world because they were attempting to take God's place, to make themselves important. God putting people back in their rightful place, if you like. But I have to say, I have a little bit of a problem with this point of view. Because when you think about it, when we think about it, the situation that these people were in and the history that they had been through is quite difficult. And so to bring punishment on them simply because they wanted to create security for their own lives, well, seems a little bit harsh to me. And it doesn't really paint God in a brilliant light either, scattering people because he feels like it. There's no doubt that what these people were doing here was wrong, but not because they were building a tower to heaven and not because they wanted to take the place of God. It was more because in building and settling, they were actually failing to live out the calling that God had put on their lives. If you remember, when Noah descended from the ark after over a year of confinement, one of the first things that God called him to do was be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. Almost identical to the words he gave to Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And yet here, not long after this commission to Noah to be fruitful and to fill the earth, we're watching as people start to gather in one place, building towers, building cities, building secure locations. They're not fulfilling the call that God gave them to fill the earth, to be fruitful, to increase in number. Rather, they're burying their heads in the sand. And they're certainly not living the new life God gave them to trust in him and to give their lives to him. Instead, they're creating a different life where they hold all the cards, where they call all the shots, where life is safe and secure within certain boundaries. So in a sense, when God scatters the people, when God comes down and relocates them all over the earth, he's not simply bringing punishment, he's not simply playing God. Instead, he's actually fulfilling his call on people's lives. He's scattering them to the far corners of the earth to be fruitful and increase in number, the very thing he'd called them to do at the beginning of time. And when he confuses their language and places them far apart, he's not simply teaching them a lesson which drives them away from being able to be near God. He's actually causing people in their new vulnerable state to come back to him and to be guided and led by the only one who now truly understands their need. Whether we call it punishment or fulfillment, the one thing this act of God does is put human beings back in a place where they can carry out his calling under his provision and care. And you know, when we think about this passage and we think about our own lives, our calling as the people of God to live out the good news of Jesus Christ, or if you like, our calling to be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth, this passage, when we read it, is a challenge. Because, you know, although we may dress up our desire to be in control and to control God in a different way to the people of Genesis chapter 11, it's still a temptation that we can be found guilty of. Whether it be attempting to build security in our own lives at the expense of others, or whether it be our wish to gather with those we enjoy being with at the exclusion of others, or whether it be our desire to control situations for our own benefit
and in turn hurt others. We're all tempted to stick in a place where we feel we have some control over what's happening in life, whether it be out of fear or uncertainty or a desire to know where life is going. Or if you like, at times when we're all tempted to bury our heads in the sand and ignore the calling of God to go out and be good news to all people, whatever it takes. And you know, astonishingly, we're also tempted to go beyond this, and even as the people of God, to seek to control God himself, setting our own times and our own places and our own ways in which God's allowed to meet us and challenge our lives. And maybe that's simply because we're scared of what God might do in our lives if we give him the freedom to reign whenever he likes, or what others might think if we totally abandon ourselves to God. But you know, as the people of God, in a world that is full of attempts to control life and dominate life, and situations where people stick their head in the sand and ignore the desperation of those around, we of all people need to be different. We of all people need to be a community who live out our calling to be good news on the earth. Not just when we feel like it. Not just when life has dealt us a good hand. Not just when we're engaged in something that we're good at and we have the resources to do. But at all times, and in all places, giving all that we have and trusting that God, who knows far more than we do, will take care of our lives from this day on. Let's pray together.